On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
What Mick Price has been really good at across his career is setting his good horses a winning pathway.
In isolation, on that performance, he's the horse to beat in the Cox Plate. The question is it an outlier or can he do it again?
It's a bit of an indictment that racehorse trainers' biggest tool to earn a quid is to get rid of the horses over to Hong Kong.
Yeah, exactly. I think that does tie in a little bit with the lack of depth looking towards Cox Plate. Yeah. If you're in the top 10, it's a bit different, but there's a lot of trainers that aren't in that level and you've got to trade.
But it would appear that Nasara is the first person that I've ever encountered who is prepared to try and change Peter Volandi's mindset.
There's nothing more frustrating when you can see that something could be better and there's an element that is stopping you from even exploring that improvement. And I think that's what New South Wales has been in this conversation.
It's amazing when you're red hot like she is that
the
gaps appear.
The sea part.
Seas part. Moses intervenes.
Welcome to that time of the week. It is The Verdict on this Queen's Birthday Monday, a long weekend for many. I hope you're having a lazy Monday morning if you're lucky enough to have the day off and enjoying the weekend. I hope you've backed a few winners. We're going to talk about the weekend's highlights. SMS us. What do you think was the performance of the weekend? 0416 1950 52. Any questions? Any discussion points? Let us know. Mick Sharkey, Matty Stewart in the house. For The Verdict. Good morning, gents. How are we?
In the unit.
House is a bit of a
house.
Liberal, house liberal imagination.
Stewart. House of Stewart sounds like
a bathroom. It's got some house like
the hovel. No, yeah. I mean, we are here anyway. winning weekend, Matty?
I read the script perfectly, but then didn't execute the plan with the pattern that emerged at Sandown. I was sort of, can't believe I took falls. This is something that only an idiot could achieve, Shark. I took Falls One Out in a quaddie, number 17. At Lobbs, you think, oh, God, that's a good start.
One out.
By something like 10 by 12 by 9. Didn't get past the second leg, even though it was an obvious front-running winner on a front-running track, the Richard Lemming horse.
It's not the quarter you gave out to the listeners on Saturday morning.
It was adjusted once the pattern emerged. I think you've got to be moved swiftly when you see a pattern emerge. And, gee, the punters generally, though, nailed it. Even down to Sir Callahad, Shark, they were just all over Sir Callahad once the pattern emerged late. So I lost, but I think most smart punters who are savvy in the run, as the meeting unfolds, probably would have had a winning day.
Yeah, probably agree with that. Yeah, it became very clear very early how that track was playing, which is unusual for Hillside, I guess. But Mick Kent explained it very well, I thought, before about the ground. And it wasn't as heavy as some thought, but it was wet enough or soft enough to stop acceleration from back in the field. And that made perfect sense the way he explained it.
And as he said, horses using it down the hill. So
use the hill to accelerate.
A lot of people think the faster you go, the more it's going to suit run-on horses. But in wet ground, they just cannot gallop through the ground. So I think all the winners that executed it perfectly just did it down the hill, didn't they? And then that was it.
It's an interesting point, though, because, you know, there's a lot of discussion about Sandown, and every participant you speak to says it is the best track in Australia, in Melbourne. They can't get rid of it. A couple of SMSs coming through here saying, Mick, with all due respect to you and others, it's about the punters. And that track on Saturday was not up to standard. To Matt Stewart, with all due respect, and to Mick Kent, if that track on Saturday was fair, I'm a monkey's uncle. I lost interest in it very early. Craig from Keilor. How are we expected to bet on a track that is as biased as it was on Sandown? Now, that's the view from the punters.
What about Caulfield? When Caulfield's played leaderish, do they all say sell Caulfield? No.
I think there's just a bit of feedback saying that everyone says that Sandown is the jewel in the crown as far as fairness and, you know, the tractability of the track, but it didn't race that way.
So one race meeting, now that goes out the window. I think that's fairly harsh.
It is a bit, but I'm a bit middle of the ground with Sandown. I mean,
Lakeside's a disaster.
It's leaderish.
Yeah, you can.
And Hillside's got its own personality issues from time to time, so I think when trainers say it's the best racetrack, they're talking about horse recovery.
Yep.
They're not necessarily talking about, and they're talking about wide open spaces and all that sort of stuff. I don't necessarily think they're talking about whether it suits the database of all the punters all the time. But I often think when I look at some Sandown meetings where there is a pattern, and it also can be Hillside as well, that I can understand the counter argument from punters where they say, well, hang on a minute, you know, this was. And as you say, Shark, Lakeside is very much an on-pace track. So, but the punter
Lakeside
who said I looked away and didn't have a bet, well, why didn't you just do a bit more research I'm not saying it's an ideal. You wouldn't want race Sandown to race that all the time. But, well, find out who the on-paces are and adapt and actually narrow the odds your way. So, yeah. But I hear what he's saying.
Interesting. We might as well talk about it off the top as we are on the topic of Sandown. The article in today's paper by The Age, which it's an interesting little curveball that's been thrown in because the state government did announce in the recent budget that there will be a quote-unquote developer's tax for any land that changes coding so that you can develop from, and then you would have to pay a certain amount of turnover tax on it, which could be up to $200 million for Caulfield, and which would scupper any thoughts of selling for redevelopment.
And I know that I've tried to get hold of the MRC this morning. I know that they are obviously in negotiations with government to try and work out whether that tax is going to be imposed on them, or whether there's a bit of wriggle room with the sporting non-profit and sporting precinct argument that there might be an exclusion from that tax hit that they're going to cop. But it does seem a bit of a curveball. It's a $200 million potentially curveball that would adjust the way they think about the value of the land against the argument to keep it, and the receipt they get from that to then fund the massive project at Caulfield, which is now bumped up to about $600 million from originally being $300 million. So the more expensive that becomes, the more they need to get as much of the sale of Sandown as they possibly can.
Is it signed and delivered, this sale? Is it absolutely decided on? Is this the way it's going to be and there's no changing of minds, or is there some flex in what could be done at that venue?
I think, and this is just my interpretation, the MRC might come back and say, well, this is why we've done this. I think there's been a couple of things that have evolved over the years that suggest they are pushing further and further towards that. And I thought the removal of the big race meeting at Sandown and taking it to Caulfield was a massive indication of the future of Sandown in their mind.
But they are giving a Group 1 meeting to Sandown.
They're giving it one thing and taking away five, almost. If you know, the grand final weekend, I would imagine that would be a low wagering weekend. Everyone's still in footy mode. I'm not saying they're setting it up to fail, but they are giving it a meeting that they can afford to give. They know that it's not going to be a make or break financial meeting like the rest of the Spring Carnival at Caulfield is. I'm not disputing the fact that they want to maximise the wagering opportunities at Caulfield. That's a very strong argument that they have there. But the byproduct of that is that it takes something away from Sandown.
It'll be interesting to see what the turnover figures were on Saturday. And Josh Banks for the MRC are always very transparent. They'll put that out probably on Wednesday as soon as it comes through. So it'll be, you know, some debate which we'll get to see from there as well. I think there's a lot of water to go under the bridge. I don't think the local council's even given it the green light yet, because they're worried about the amount of overcrowding in that area if you sell the entirety and put 7,000 houses on it. Now, I wonder whether there's a middle of the road meeting where you can carve off some of the car parks in the outside area, keep the track itself, but you could sell some of the periphery of that Sandown.
What a nice way to bring. And potentially, you know, there are other uses for, you know, areas like the grandstand or whatever, or facilities there for participants or education or training of participants, whatever it is, because it is so, the location of Sandown, when you look at the population in suburban Melbourne, it's right there. It's in the guts of it.
It is. It is. Like, as far as that demographic goes. But the only thing about that argument about whether you could have accept the green wedge thing and have a jockey riding a staff academy and all those sort of things, even housing the internationals again, never once have I heard the MRC buy into that discussion.
They haven't
heard them.
Ultimately, it's their asset. They will do what they want with it, and we can all argue yes, no, we agree, we disagree. I think it's a shame. You only, as Mick Kent said, you can sell a track once, you can sell land once. Once it's sold, goodbye, see you later. And look at South Australia. I don't know if the Morfettville Parks reality that we have now, I don't know if people would say that's a better result than what they had.
Yeah, and just because punters, if everything's driven by turnover, who's to say that 5 years down the track, the turnover mentality will still be the same? So, say if Sandown goes and Caulfield becomes this multi Night Precinct with an inner track and an outer track. You're going to have Moonee Valley wondering about its hold on night racing in the metropolitan area. There's nowhere else in the world where you'd have two metropolitan night racing venues, I would imagine, going hand in hand. So there's that. And 10 years down the track, if Caulfield has the mega precinct and they're racing a lot on the inner track, who's to say that punters will continue to have faith on what that track might end up being down the track? So you don't know. That's an unanswerable question, though, isn't it?
No, there's a lot of water to go under the bridge as to what it will play. And I think it's going to be a long game, too, from state government approval to local government approval and so forth. It's interesting, the SMSs that are coming through here on Saturday. You know, I like to have a bet once the market's open, Sandown. That goes out the window when a track plays like that. That's from Dino. Another one said, I loved Sir Callahad. Sandown track played well for me. I love it when there's a bias. At the form, all you need to do is look for horses up front,
well,
back
see,
on speed horses.
Point. And we talk about this often.
There's a division
the
from
markets.
Those out there.
But the early
but
markets,
early
right?
Markets, you were taking a massive risk.
But hey, look, the early market thing. We go back 10 years ago. The early markets, the punters have been conditioned by bookmakers to play in early markets, you know, and oh, get the earlies, oh, here we go, we bet now, and articles on .com and on the websites and everything about, oh, the early value, the early markets. It's this push to get punters betting early. Do you know why? Because the percentages and the favour is so much more in the bookmakers' hands. So they have conditioned the punter to bet early. If you could go back and if you talk to some professional punters, right, who have long rusted on in this game, betting for 20, 30 years, they just think it's absolute lunacy. Oh, I got $26. Yeah, but hang on a second.
And then you get the other little whammy of deductions. So
yes.
you might be betting and get something at $15 on the Wednesday. Three horses come out and you cop 35 cents deduction.
Yeah.
And then you get the late blowout. You know,
yeah, the late blowout.
We're witnessing lately, the late blowout.
When the real money comes.
41, 51, 81 and things like
when
that.
When the real money comes.
So to the punter who says, I like to bet early, well, you're assuming perfection of the track. And I reckon 8 out of 10 tracks, wherever they are.
It's the riskiest time to bet early.
Are subject to some pattern that you want to adjust to.
Betting early is fraught with danger.
Just moving on.
1 o'clock on a Friday.
Yeah, especially 1 o'clock on a Friday morning. What's your highlight out of Sandown? Was it Carlene Heffel, Gav Bedgood, beautiful rides, well done?
I think definitely the Heffel-Bedgood storylines, but Gavin Bedgood, you forget what a good jumps jockey he was. Like, he won the best jumps races that there was to win. He won at Warrnambool. He won, you know, he was a serious jockey.
Robbie Lang ally?
Yeah, absolutely. And another one of these, I guess, pathways... Another good jumps jockey that's moved into training.
Yep.
And he's doing it with sharper horses, I think it's fair to say at the moment. I'm really interested to see what Gavin can do with more stoutly bred animals as his career develops and goes on. And a nice storyline with Sir Callahad as well. Bought the horse second hand, got left with it, backed the horse, backed himself. And it's won four times for them in the first, 12 months or something of ownership. You know, they're great stories. That whole resale market through English Digital and all the other online platforms, there is so many opportunities now fortnightly, if you get on there regularly, to buy these secondhand horses, repurpose them, or target, you know, a specific part of the industry, specific races, and you can win, and you can enjoy success.
Yeah, and he's a good trainer, Benji. He doesn't like to lose. He's a bit like Patrick Payne. If they get beaten a short half head, you want to clear the decks. But, you know, he still bobs up at the picnics. So he's a sort of trainer who is trying to advance beyond those horses that are sort of between those sort of classes. So he's doing really, really well. And I think for Mick as well, what he probably didn't say about Falls is that the patch-up job he's done on that horse has been quite amazing, with his bad feet and all that. As you know, we go down there every Sunday, and every Sunday it's been, how's Falls?
I'm going to put a little video out on social media, because Michael Kent actually sent me a video yesterday.
Yes, he videotaped me doing something. And
he said there was a strange occurrence at trackwork this morning. I thought, oh, no, don't tell me. Something's happened. And it was a photo of Matt Stewart sweeping out boxes.
Which, oh, good.
It was a bit like Harley's Comet.
Matt Stewart does do from time to time.
Bit of a manual labour fantasy camp down there, was it?
It was a bit. But that horse, if you look at his feet, it's amazing how much effort has gone in, And a few of us were sort of thinking, why is he bothering? This horse is going like a bustard. Why is he persevering with falls? And Mick, you know what Mick's like. He just sort of gives you that funny little look and goes, oh, well, just keep chipping away, keep chipping away. And it's he doesn't show outward elation, Mick, but I reckon
it's an understatement.
He was pretty bouncy on Sunday. Yeah. He was pretty bouncy.
How good's Ranveer? Is he the horse out of the whole race meeting that you want to take home? Can he progress to a spring contender? He got the form behind Profiteer on debut.
I don't know if I saw a spring contender on Saturday. I think it was a nice win. It was his race to lose, really, after scratching. So the race got hacked a bit. And, you know, I don't think Hurtle really handled the ground.
Well,
Moses was a little bit off. So things kind of went his way. Let's see him again. Let's wait for Ranveer to build a better body of work, I guess, before we go charging into the spring.
It's a bit of a turn of phrase du jour at the moment, isn't it? Body of work with horses.
It's
becoming common.
Well, it's sort of filtered over from the AFL, hasn't it? Like players, you know, and I guess we're blaming Harford and whatnot for their little Monday morning reviews as I listen to as I go for a run. Right? And he often talks about the body of work. Yeah. So I think it's just creeping into the vernacular in racing.
Body of work.
But what's your body of work like, Matty?
It's wafer thin. I think I'm a little bit more optimistic about that horse. I think he came in off one minor jump out. He got onto a heavy. He missed a kick a bit. Ben had to surge through a bit and hold his spot and then go again. And I think as much as it did get whacked around by scratchings, there was still one or two left in there that... So I'm backing Matt Lorien because I reckon he's one of the smartest trainers in Australia. And whatever course he plots, I'll sort of back him for it to be the right course.
Can I just do a little U-turn for a moment from Ranveer back to Mick Kent? That little yarn he had with you, and I've been aware of what he's doing down at Glen Forbes, sort of at the top of the Bass Coast, I guess, Bass region.
A lot of fallen trees down there yesterday, apparently.
That is a fascinating little sideline to mix, I guess, shortened holiday, and let's start this project a little sooner than we anticipated. What he's essentially doing is building a training facility that will cater specifically or really improve the chances of horses getting ground and being quality stayers. He's putting hill tracks in. It's all at his own expense. He's using natural cambers of the land. It's taking a little bit, and I think part of this European trip was to polish up the plans for this training complex that he would build when he came home. And he would have seen a little bit of it, and he'd had past experience of it in Europe, but he's borrowing from European-style training. He's borrowing from how Australians have conditioned and trained stayers in the past and what he sees as working for the great trainers of stayers in Australia. And he's putting it all together at this property at Glen Forbes, which is not exactly renowned for...
I don't even know where that is.
So it's kind of on the way to Phillip Island, kind of like that Bass Coasty sort of area.
You hang a left before Phillip Island, and I've walked up that track 100 times, and it is, as you can see, it is... you're tired at the end of it. It's a stiff rise. So he's... But this goes back to what Peter Moody was saying.
I've seen you walk up those steps out the front. There's four of them and you're blowing hard. So
I've portable studio. Never once have I offered to help him. But it goes back to what Peter Moody was saying a couple of weeks ago about the inventiveness of Australian trainers and how they've got Mother Nature at their disposal.
Yeah.
If they can just find the right spots, whether it's a beach or a hill or something like that. So
yeah,
it's a good yarn in that. I'm keen to see how that actually plays out practically and what horses, once they get on those tracks,
absolutely
what they start to do.
Hey, boys, we're going to move on because I want to talk about Queensland, and there's no doubt it was a highlight on Saturday. We're going to have a chat to Neil Wilson, who is the chairman of the VRC, and he's also one of the lucky owners of Zaki in a moment.
Get that under his hat for a while.
He did, didn't he? Where do you go now? Like, at this point in time, Sharky, and... People said he beat nothing. Holmesman did win an Australian Cup, and he's run very well. And he did it with ease on Saturday. Right now, if you were going to put $5 on a horse to win a Cox Plate from the Australian local horses, would it be Zaki, would it be Very Elegant, or would it be an X Factor up-and-coming three-year-old?
Zaki's the obvious one. But the storyline now, and the interest for me as a spectator, is how Annabelle Neesham manages this horse so deep into a Queensland preparation, into a Cox Plate preparation. There's a small window for this horse to have a break. Now, European horses kind of trained all year, we know that. She's a worldly trainer. She's got experience all over the world, so no doubt she's got a plan in mind already. But there is that stop, reset, go again aspect to this story. The Cox Plate isn't, as Annabelle wished it was, 2 weeks after this race. So there's a management game here for her. She's got the horse at the top of the game, going really well, but the race is months away.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting build-up, and we might have some breaking news this morning because Neil Wilson, the chairman of the VRC, joins us, and there is a whisper floating around that he has actually told Annabelle Neesham to forget about the Cox Plate and this horse should be aimed towards the Melbourne Cup. Good morning, Neil. Is that correct?
Good morning, Michael. I can tell you that's not correct. It's exciting times.
It is, isn't it, Neil? And as Shark was just saying, as exciting as it's been what we've seen ever since that flashing light run in the Doncaster, it's now about looking ahead because obviously Flemington, you got McKinnon's, maybe Melbourne Cups as well, and Turnbull's.
That was a joke. Like the Melbourne Cup's not on the table.
That was a clear joke. So the next 3 months is going to be really exciting to see what sort of a course Annabelle plots with Saki.
Yeah, that's right, Matt. And look, I'm really privileged to be part of a great group of owners. So I'm sure the experts in that group and working with Annabelle will set that path correctly. But it is interesting. It sort of feels September's a little way away, but a lot has to happen leading up to that. And as you were just saying there, Mick, just the planning through pre-Cox Plate, Cox Plate itself, and then post-Cox Plate, it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. And of course, the other horses that are around at the same time will be interesting as well to see who he lines up against.
Neil, tell us how you got involved with Zaki. Who made the phone call? Did you hear a whisper that this import had been purchased? Or did you fancy Annabelle as a trainer? Did somebody reach out to you? How did you get involved in the horse?
Well, it's a great question, and I've spent a fair bit of time on my own doing it over the years, owning horses outright and doing a bit of breeding and so forth, and I worked out that I just simply was not any good at that, and decided to get into some syndicates and find the best people to organise those. And actually, Glenn Carmody, who's the treasurer at the VRC, has a relationship with Annabelle through the Kieran Maher the history. And he worked with a bloodstock agent, Stuart Bowman, and then put the note out, as he has a few times, which we've weighed in on, and put the note out. And fortunately, I decided this is one that I wanted to go into. So there's a great group of owners, and there are a few racing people on it. Neil Werrett from the VRC board is in the horse as well. David Sin from the Rennie Valley Racing Club and Tim Eddy from Racing Victoria. So we do have a racing contingent as part of the ownership, and plus a number of other well-known racing identities and owners as well. And they're a great group of people that just highlights syndicates. When you get together and enjoy what's happening with Zaki, it just says like a syndicate is just the best thing when your horse is going well and the relationships and friendships that you build. So a real endorsement for that model.
So, as a self-confessed failed individual owner and breeder, what is the thrill like? I know to be part of a team, as you say, with a syndicate, but this is the horse that everyone's talking about. A year ago, it was Russian Camelot, and for 4 years in a row, it was Winx, and everyone tried to imagine what it was like to be part of that team. And you are a measured sort of guy by nature, but what do you have a bit of a high five to yourself in the mirror and things like that? What's the feeling like having the next big thing in Australian racing?
I think that measure got tested on Saturday, Matt. Was pretty excited around 2 o'clock. It was it is exciting. Like you sort of wake up and it's always like the day after the football game or the day after the races, and when you've had a win like that and it's happened 3 times in a row in recent times in group racing, you do get a bit excited and start to do some comparisons as to how those people felt, those owners felt with those great horses. And it's very early days, and you know, right now, just really enjoying the friendship with the syndicate that's developing, and lots of the conversations and the dreams and what ifs and could this continue. All of those things are great because they keep the conversation going. We'll see each other at the races, and it's just a great thing to be part of.
Neil Werrett's probably there going, Neil, just calm it. Been down this road before.
Well, Neil also has a share in Tafani.
Exactly.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that about Neil Werrett because you would think that. I think he's one of the most excited as part of the group, and it just says how deep this sort of thing runs with Neil. He's so excited about the horse, and we were talking late Saturday night as he'd flown back from Brisbane to Sydney because we couldn't get to Brisbane, of course, and And he kept us up to date all during the day with photographs and what was going on. And yeah, it's fantastic, really fantastic.
Well, it's going to be very exciting times. Now, there was a little rumour during the week that a good friend north of the border, Peter Volandis, might increase the Hill Stakes to $1 million, which would be on Turnbull Stakes Day. Now, that's a perfect lead into a Cox Plate, but where would Annabelle take Zaki if the Hill Stakes was $1 million or the Turnbull at Flemington?
Well, I think I think that'll be Annabelle's choice, but great racing clubs love to have great forces on track, and it's a good time of the year to be at Flemington, I think, isn't it?
Prize money, Neil, there's some sort of announcement looming as well. Is it, I mean, I'm not putting the cart before the horse, but a race like the Turnbull would be one of many that might be identified as a potential race that might get a hike?
Yeah, we made a submission to Racing Victoria, as we do each year, and as the other clubs do, the prize money that package is being worked through, and as you say, there'll be announcements in the next week or so. But you don't get everything that you want, but you try and prioritise where you think it's in the best interest of the race and the pattern of racing, and in the best interest of the club as well. So we've made our submissions well and truly before Zaki was doing what Zaki's been doing. So we'll see how that all comes out.
Just another one, which is an issue of the moment too, with Flemington's meeting on Saturday. You've got a number of winter meetings throughout this period. What's the latest with COVID and the likelihood of getting some crowds back this weekend?
Yeah, it's a delicate time, Michael. We're in contact, and Steve Rossich doing a great job dealing with all the variables that we've seen for some time now. But having gone back into lockdown in recent times has created another curveball for us. And dealing with the government pretty much on a daily basis, dealing with Racing Victoria pretty much on a daily basis. We are having some discussions today, and we'd hope by tomorrow or Wednesday that we'll be able to announce what is happening this Saturday. It hopefully will be that we can have some crowds, but we won't be returning to the freedom we had pre-lockdown. We'll probably go back a few steps before we go forward. So hopefully we'll have some crowds, but I think this week and the week after will be, the next few weeks will be back to those earlier stages of coming out of lockdown. But that's all to be worked through, and we're doing everything we can to try and make sure that the authorities know how we're set up. They've seen us in operation now, so we've got a benchmark that they can look to, and we're pretty comfortable that benchmark holds up in terms of the tracing and everything they need.
Neil, I had a chat to Chris Burke from International Racehorse Transport this morning about levels of interest regarding internationals for the big spring races, mostly the Melbourne Cup, and he said we are expecting the dialogue to resume or take up after Royal Ascot. That's when it normally happens, and Nick Williams and others are talking about their interest in bringing horses out. Even though IRT hasn't yet had any firm interest, the next couple of weeks will be really interesting towards how that sort of gathers a bit of momentum.
Yes, Matt. We've post the announcement of the new conditions, we've been in contact with a number of industry participants overseas, trainers and others, and the sense we get is that there'll be a reasonable number of horses coming across, but that's all to play out. And of course, there's some that are not comfortable with where things are at. But you know, this is, as we've said on many occasions, a long game for us, and it might go sideways and backwards in the short term, but our strong view is that over time people will work through and manage the conditions as they continue to evolve as well. No one in any of those calls has said to us we don't want to win the Melbourne Cup. So I think we'll see how it pans out, but we certainly have had strong indication from a number that they're wanting to bring a horse out this year.
Neil, well done as part owner of the most exciting horse in Australia on the weekend, and we'll have our fingers crossed that we can get some crowds back to Flemington on Saturday. Appreciate your time this morning.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Just on Eagle Farm generally, like I reckon, so it's the stage scene setter now for the spring to a degree, because it's fresh in mind and everyone's going to be talking about Zaki, as we were talking about the other day. Converge is now leapt towards becoming probably as high a rating two-year-old as any two-year-old in Australia off the back of what he's done at his last two starts. And Ayrton, if you look at the Cox Plate betting, you've got Zaki, very elegant, who comes back into work today with Nature Strip and the other good one of Wallace.
Hungry Heart.
Hungry Heart. And then you've got Contrail, Armoury, who's running at Royal Ascot, and then you've got Ayrton. So if you assume it's going to be tough for the internationals, tougher to come, then you've got bookended in the top of the market. You've got Zaki and Ayrton in the Cox Plate at the moment. So
we need to take a quick break. Before we do, just a quick word on the other highlights. Craig Williams, unbelievable on Saturday. I think he gave a reminder to a lot of people about how good Willow is. There's an SMS here. 3 boats to Willow, 5 rides, 4, 3 wins. All high-quality races, riding against the best. Well done. That's Phil from Tassie. 3 wins and 2 thirds on Saturday as well. He was sublime. And the story about Tafane is quite remarkable as well, because big call from the owners to say, no, we're pulling her out of that sale. And for Mike Moroney, with the battles that she'd had, the health issues, which I don't think a lot of people really were aware of, to get her back to win that Group 1 on Saturday was a massive performance.
It was. And she was the one. You know, it's kicking myself, because if you took them all on face value on their best form, she was clearly the winner
of that. Yeah, I'll tell you what, the Horovian was super. Yeah, was.
The question was at their best form, though. And then the other aspect was, and what gave you confidence as we got nearer the race, was how the track was playing. And Willow previously had started to pick that right part of the track. His ride on Superium was, he just found that A ground, you know, straight into it, bang, put Tafane in the same spot. And post-race, he'd done his homework too on Vega 1. He had it in the sights, and he remembered, as he does so meticulously when he does his assessments of the race, this horse has only got a short, sharp sprint. I don't have to go too early here. Let's wait for him to go, and I'll stalk him and pick him off. And that's exactly what happened.
And the funny thing was, we're talking pre-race about the one thing Vega 1 didn't want was to be exposed too early. He was probably exposed 10 strides too early for him, for Vega 1.
Well, so, he jumped so well.
Yeah, yeah. But Rachel King did it. It was a great ride, but it just didn't. Oh, just one little tiny little point on the strategy. As much as everything was looking towards the spring, it is a victim of too many other options and pop-ups and stuff. It used to be every good horse ran in it, and now it doesn't seem to be the melting pot race that it used to be. So I think it's probably copped a bit of a whack because of what's been happening around it with a lot of other races.
We're getting screamed at. Producer says we must break immediately. So let's take a break, and on the other side of that, we'll come back and talk about the win in the JJ Atkins. It was stunning. Have we got a new contender for the upcoming three-year-old that we want to be following towards the Caulfield Guineas? Converge, Adrian Bott, Gay Waterhouse to the fore as well. More to come. Keep the SMSs coming through on the verdict.
Converge have broken clear here from Yalas, Invincible Tears, Tiger of Malay. Subterranean's over on the inside, but Converge is well clear near the line, and Converge will romp home the Atkins. Converge by 3 seconds of photo. Up there was Yalas, Tiger of Malay, Invincible Tears, Subterranean.
Oh, that was jaw-dropping in the JJ Atkins. I'm not sure the quality of those that he beat on Saturday, Sharky, but there's not much more that this Frankel two-year-old can do. His last two starts have been absolutely eye-catching. And the ease of that win surprised me on Saturday, eased up by 3 and a bit lengths.
Very, very good win. He did beat a good horse. Giannis is a very good horse.
You've been spruking Giannis for a while.
He will win a good race as a three-year-old. I am certain of that. And yes, Frankel doing it again. I know it's a week's a long time in racing sometimes, Matty, but we were having a similar conversation about Frankel.
A car puller, he turns into Buddy Galileo.
Can I give you some statistics about Frankel?
You do that.
So in Australia, that's his third Group 1 win as a stallion. Hungry Hearts 1-2, Converges now 1-1. He is operating at 9.5% Group 1 winners to runners in Australia, which is enormous. And as far as stakes winners are concerned, that's his sixth stakes winner from 21 named runners, which puts him at 28% stakes winners to runners. Oh. So when I know what you're saying, though, because we talked it through last week. 100% understand what you're saying. Because it's Frankel, every time you see, and they're a bit of a rare fruit down here. We don't see loads of them. But when you see one, you think, well, expectations are up here, as opposed to the run-of-the-mill stallion that's down here. And when they fail, they're abject
failures.
Maybe
we failures. Can head around them a bit better too. We always stuffed up with the Galileos and Montures. Maybe our trainers are thinking, we're learning how to train a Frankel now. You know,
yeah.
Port Louis pulled up with all sort of litany of...
Did he? Because I thought soreness. He was disappointing, yeah.
Soreness, so...
There was a sneaky good run there from a trainer who joined the Group 1 club a week ago. There's a horse called Dark Rebel, who's by a Stern. Edward Cummings trains it. Very good debut winner at Warwick Farm going back a couple of months. Locked its jaw in the size and ran off the track. It ran eighth on Saturday, but it was a sneaky good eighth.
There's another
again, longer-term three-year-old mile-to-mill distance horse. I've got an eye on Dark Rebel.
John Simons and Sheila Laxton have got the horse that ran fourth or fifth in that race, and it is a dead-set star. It needs a bit of cut out of the ground and a bit of distance. They were going to have a crack at the Derby with it. I'm just going to find it now. It's a flashing light horse for a bit of sting out of the ground with a bit more cut out of the track. Oh, sorry, it was in Ayrton's race. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, there was no runner in that race.
Without thinking.
Yeah, without thinking, by Say You Think. So that's one for our little black book.
Mm-hmm. A couple of SMSs coming through here. What about converging for a Cox Plate? Another one saying, of the two-year-olds, Animo would pants him heading towards Cox Plate.
He would, but is he going there? Where's Converge going? They may not go to a Cox Plate. They might just pick off, you know, a path towards a Guineas, see where he ends up. You know, he may not be a Cox Plate horse. I'll tell you what we won't have is we won't have Gay Waterhouse saying, this is the best colt I've ever trained because he's Snipperoo.
That was a hell of a...
It was very, like very close, Gay Waterhouse.
Matthew, this is the best colt I've ever trained.
His son got in a bit of strife last week by the ad watchdog as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What regard?
The racy ads.
The racy ads, which I remember doing a comment piece on those about 3 or 4 months ago when they first came out. I can't believe in the modern world. I mean, I know everyone says, oh, he's just looking for market share and he's pushing the boundaries. And in 2021, they looked like they were straight out of a Benny Hill skit. I just couldn't believe there was not as much sort of concern about what the hell is this angle that he's taking from the 1970s. And he has been given a touch-up by the... Not an ad watchdog with any real power, but one that makes recommendations to higher bodies. It says, is this appropriate?
I've got a nice SMS which has just come through. Matt Black booking without thinking. Now, that's irony.
That is irony.
There's a couple of other ones here. This one's for you, Shark. We've got some people that have woken up on the wrong side of bed this morning.
Ah, okay.
Shark is just another breeding agent parasite. That is everything that is wrong with Australian racing.
Breeding agent parasite. I'm a general manager of a farm.
And then,
if that's what that translates
and
to.
And then there's another one here. Here we go, Felgate. Another Felgate champion. I am disappointed today that no Mytho or Annabelle has been on the show. What's wrong? Every time Anthony Mithen comes on, and I could have got Mytho after Brooklyn Hustle won, or we could have got Annabelle. This person who doesn't give their... name, but I'm very happy to have them as a regular listener because every day without fail they will text in saying another Annabelle or another Mytho interview. So not a fan of Annabelle, Mytho or me. But anyway, good to have you listening on this Queen's Birthday Monday.
This is what you should be doing. When there's a story, don't report that story and go and report something else that's not a story.
Exactly.
That's maybe what
now,
we should be doing.
A couple of quick ones here because we're going to get on to Ronnie Hutchinson in a moment. I forgot to follow, but SMS is telling us that Josh from Horsham did it again. So,
did he?
Statue needs to be made. Is Josh from Horsham stealing Sharky's job on Friday Form Focus? Josh?
Well, we promised we'd get him on the phone, but what did he tip?
We're a fool. I didn't follow you, but the SMS is that I'm going to go back and we'll have a look at that. So, Josh will be a guest tipster on Friday Form Focus on Saturday.
Special from Noosa's got the sack.
Terrible.
The $1.50 trots mold. Do you think he got one leg?
No, and they're all $1.03. Just a quick one too. Billy Gibbons. I haven't had time to go through the gongs, but an SMS saying, brilliant that Bill Gibbons has got a Queen's Birthday gong and it is well deserved. So well done to Billy Gibbons on that as well.
Exactly right. Sharing the stage with Peter Credlin, which is an unusual one for me. But
I'm getting political. We're delving into dangerous territory, Matty.
Maxie was over here last night. He's done a massive project, a school project on Bill the Bastard and Bill Gibbons. And
good. I thought you were going to say Peter Credlin there for a minute.
Part of the school project is to paint a picture of your subject. So he's currently in the process of painting a picture of Bill the Bastard, but doesn't have a photo of him, so he's doing a photo of Midnight as a painting and sort of turning it into a chestnut Bill the Bastard.
Okay,
About, well done yesterday, Dean Yendall, 5 winners, including the Adelaide Ace, a great ride in the Swan Hill Cup. And on Saturday, what about these two apprentices that absolutely stole the show in Adelaide and also in Sydney?
New arrangement from Grand Piano, who's lifting. New arrangement just in front. Reece Jones riding for dear life, and there's four for the kid. New arrangement just beat Grand Piano.
And Greetings Ned ranged up, hit the lead from Munster and Domination, and Greetings Ned is going to roar away against the bias and make it five. It's a handful for Opperman. Greetings Ned from Munster and Domination.
I know there's a lot of talk about apprentices at the moment in Victoria, that there may be a struggle to get that many, but around Australia, yep, how lucky are we at the talent that these young kids are showing?
Josh Richards is the other one who's, yep, absolutely nailing it down here as, yep, well. So there might not be many of them, and that's an ongoing debate, but the ones that are here are absolutely killing it. And interesting from the call there from Brett Davis about the bias at Morphettville Park as well. Well, that is a given, Morphettville Park. So I don't even know whether you call it bias anymore. But Opperman's really seized the moment since getting the opportunity on that Derby horse.
Absolutely. On tomorrow, we might try and have a chat to young Jacob Opperman and also Reece Jones, who a lot of people wouldn't know much about Reece.
Didn't know much about him at all.
In Victoria, as well as Linda Meach, who had her first win back since becoming a mum. We'll have a chat to Linda tomorrow because we're running out of time. It's a remarkable performance for... And we know what Claire Cunningham's going to do. She's shutting down her stable to focus on being a mum. So for someone like Linda Meach to have a child and then come back to the rigours of racing and ride winners, it's a huge achievement.
She's almost come back to a slightly different era, hasn't she? Like, I mean, she's a current jockey, but ever since like the emergence of Jamie Carr and Rachel King and Kayla Crowther and all that, so it's going to be a different looking jockey's room when Linda gets back into town, yeah, isn't it?
Speaking of legendary jockeys, so I wonder what Ron Hutchinson would have said if someone said to him while he was riding at his peak over in Europe that the ladies will be dominating in the early 2000s and there'll be mums riding winners. And the legend himself at 93 years of age joins us this morning because it's a special day, Mornington, the meeting today. They're paying tribute to Ron Hutchinson, a race named after him, and also the late Jim Marconi as well. It's great to have Ron on the verdict this morning with Mick Sharkey, Matty Stewart and myself. Good morning, Ron. How are you?
Oh, good morning, Mike. Yeah, it's very, very interesting to listen to all of your comments just now. It's amazing. As you say, the young ladies are coming along. In my day, of course, they weren't even allowed to work in stables. They were, it wasn't considered a job for a girl to work in a stable or be a jockey. That was the farthest thing from people's minds. But how it's changed, and quite rightly so, in Jamie Carr and Linda Meach have done so well to follow the races, and I admire them greatly. They're fantastic.
Ron, it's great to see Jamie Carr with a ride in your race today as well. She rides a first starter for the Freedmans. What do you make of Jamie's rise to the top in the last season, and what do you make of her style?
Oh, she's outstanding. In fact, I haven't ever recalled her, even amongst all the good jockeys of the past, they haven't dominated racing like she has this season. And to think that to ride a 100 winners in a season, and it's unbelievable. And she's so consistent, and I watch her to a great extent, and I think that she always seems to have the horses travelling very nicely. I notice that they don't pull with her. They settle down quite well, and she sits there and she waits, and she's a very patient young lady, and I greatly admire her. And in fact, she's really outstanding, and good luck to her.
Ron, I think a lot of us would love to see Jamie Carr riding at Royal Ascot sometime in the future, and Royal Ascot kicks off tomorrow, and it must bring back a lot of memories for you.
Oh, yes, it certainly does. It really is a wonderful meeting, and without any doubt, I'd say it would be the best 4 days of racing in the world. And to win a race, everybody is, if they've got a horse good enough, they always want to run at Ascot. And the pageantry and the Queen being there, and the way they do it, it's absolutely sensational. And it was, of course, I was lucky enough to ride for the Duke and Duchess of Norfolk, and then that day, in their day, Duke was the Queen's representative for the Royal Ascot, and so we always looked forward to having runners at the meeting, and luckily we had some luck. So as I say, it's coming on next week, and I'm looking forward to it immensely.
And you got to spend a little bit of time with the Queen because of your successes, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I had many. In fact, I won the Goodwood Cup for around about that time. I can't remember what year it was, but it was a Goodwood Cup, and she was there, happened to be there at the Goodwood races. And actually, the very first ride I had for the Queen on a horse called Orbiston, and it won a race at Lingfield on my very first ride, an outsider was. I was lucky to get the ride. And anyway, luckily for me, it got up and won, and the Queen happened to be at the races that particular day, and so I spent a bit of time with her talking about the horses after the races, so it was quite nice.
Hutchie, it's always amazed me the way it flows, Royal Ascot. It seems almost like the best race is race one, day one, the Queen Anne. And I remember Frankel winning it and others. But for those of us that haven't been, what is the biggest day? Is it Gold Cup Day? Or is it the first day with the parade?
Yeah, I'd like to tell you the Gold Cup on the Thursday, when the pinnacle of the week. The Gold Cup, if you've got a good ride in the Gold Cup, you know, it's a great race to win. It's sort of just like the Melbourne Cup here, you know. And it's a long-distance race. It's nearly, 2.5 mile, and it's a good spectacle. And it's, usually all the best stayers from all around the Europe come out, the French horses and the German horses, all those sort of horses come out. And it's quite a great race to have. And if you're lucky enough, which I was one year, I'm lucky enough to win the race. So it brings back very, very great memories for me.
Ron, what about the races like the Royal Hunt Cup and things like that? You know, we've got fields of 24 in a Melbourne Cup, but they've got 30-plus in races like that in those big field handicaps.
Yes, that's right, they do. They have a big, of course, it's down a straight mile. And it's, you know, the horse, they have, 30 runners, or 20 runners, or 30 runners, you know, a big, very big fields as a rule. And it's a great race to watch too, you know, like, straight mile. And it's a unique race. But all the races are where the good 2-year-olds come out, they save them. If they've got a good 2-year-old, they save it for the Royal Ascot, the Queen Mary of the Good Fillies race, and the Royal Palace is a 3-year-old race. All great races and good horses. And good horses that can win. And fortunately, we've horses like Black Caviar go over there and take on them and win. So, as I say, it's and Takeover Tarka, I can remember when he went over there, it was very, very interesting and a pleasure to be there too.
Ron, today, well done to the Mornington Racing Club and the MRC, because you've got a race named after you in your honour, and also Jim Marconi, who was a wonderful local there who trained some great horses. Unfortunately, because of blasted COVID, you won't be able to be there in person today and watch your own race.
That's right, yeah. Unfortunately, we've got to stay home and watch it on the television. And I must say, in my race, they particular Peter Horriban has donated a saddle to the winning rider. I've got to sit and watch the TV and pick out which one has been ridden the right way. So, Peter, congratulations to Peter for donating a nice saddle for some lucky person today.
Well, Ron, enjoy it, hopefully next year, because you're fighting fit. You can take Matty Stewart at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Okay.
Hey, Ron, enjoy the day. Always great to have a chat with a legend like yourself. And once again, well done to the club for naming races in honour of you and Jim Marconi.
Oh, thank you, Mike. Yeah, good to talk to you. Best of luck yourself.
Good on you, Ron.
One of his sons is a vet and a regular down at track work on a Sunday as well, so we always got a bit to do with the Hutchie family. Hey, what about
how's the memory on him?
Oh, it's just phenomenal.
He's recalling winners from Lingfield how many years ago?
Unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
What are we looking forward to most at Royal Ascot?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to. The coverage over the next few days here. We've got one of the best in the business when it comes to sourcing international winners who's going to help us all out, the Hawk. Andrew Hawkins will be coming on and joining me every day to give his tips. We'll also be touching base, obviously, throughout the week over there with local trainers and Lee Mottershead. But the Hawk now is the racing manager for Highclere Racing Stables. We'll have a chat to Harry Herbert throughout the week. They've got a number of horses who are contesting the week over in Royal Ascot and are earmarked to come out here as well. So it's going to be a brilliant week of racing, and it will, I still think, have a big impact on Spring Carnival. I know the Williams team have got a lot of horses going around over there throughout the week as well.
Well, just the Gold Cup on Thursday, you've got Twilight Payment, Master of Reality, Santiago, we know, obviously Stradivarius, so that's a Melbourne Cup flavour in that race there. And I think the Prince of Wales on Wednesday, Lord North, all these regulars, Armoury, who we know, Love, Adabe, are going around in the Prince of Wales. The Queen Anne... I think the most exciting horse in Europe at the moment, Shark, or one of them, is Palace Pier for John Gosden, who goes around for Frankie in the...
Yeah.
He won the lock-in, bolted in. He's the one that they think might be the next big thing. And
there's a horse to watch in the Wolford and two on Tuesday night, Patrick Sarsfield. He could make his way down here in the Queen's Vase on Wednesday. Three-year-old race staying trip. We'll often see a few of them come out of that race and head down here. So, yeah, there are races throughout the week that could throw forward horses that will aim up at the carnival.
And Tash goes around on the...
couple of quick ones before we finish SMS here. Don't forget about the win yesterday. Oh, what was the name of the race? It was for the horses that hadn't won a race.
The slow horses.
Oh, the Droughtbreaker.
The Droughtbreaker. Yes. Well done to Russell Osborne
Dancing
and
Duck.
The owners of Dancing Duck, who broke its drought at its 28th start. And I know there was a bit of controversy with Rick McIntosh over the week with that. I'm not going to mention the word that he said, but I think it was a brain snap, brain fade from Rick, and I'm glad that he came out and had an unreserved apology afterwards for what he said, but I don't think we need to delve deeper into that. I think Rick is embarrassed, and he said so, so I think we can move on for that. Matty, there's a bit of news that will be breaking during the week. Sean Carroll, the integrity officer as well.
Yeah, he has finalised his independent report of the circumstances surrounding the whole Richard Lamming saga, with the stewards being stood, with one of the stewards being stood down and so on, and his report will be observed by the minister. That a large number of his findings will be released publicly on Wednesday, and there'll be, I would imagine, some fairly strong recommendations and observations from him that may require implementation as well. So that'll be Wednesday regarding the fallout from the Richard Lemming, collapse of the Richard Lemming case.
Okay. And we're awaiting maybe this week an announcement on prize money as well. So there could be plenty of news coming out of RV and the surrounds this week as well. Sharky, have you got a winner today at Mornington? Have you had a look? It's a good Monday Queen's Birthday meeting at Mornington.
I hadn't had a look, but why not back the story with Ron Hutchison, his favourite jockey, Jamie Carr, to win his race on Beagle.
Yeah, first starter, might who's have, the favourite?
Might have one for us during the ad break.
Oh.
You don't want to partake with the listeners?
No, I like this.
I don't think I'm allowed to.